Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to start this show out this afternoon talking about capital punishment and why the Meyer material does not endorse the death penalty. The Meyer material explains, in fact, that a person that performs or endorses the death penalty is not better than the person that has been sentenced. It also states that the person that favors capital punishment is not better in their thoughts and feelings than the one that is supposed to receive the death penalty. The German word Todesstrafe means capital punishment or the death penalty. The German word befortet means to endorse, to approve, or favor. And the German word Gedanken refers to the thoughts, the feelings, and the cogitations. Now, I did a little study of capital punishment, both historically and what some of the other Meyer books have to say about capital punishment. It was really interesting that the Talmud of Emmanuel talks about capital punishment, and there is a page up on the Future Mankind site that is the introduction, I believe, to the Talmud of Emmanuel that talks about capital punishment. But before I do that, let me define the term and then go over some of the methods that have been used in capital punishment historically. Capital punishment, or the death penalty, is a legal process whereby a person is put to death by the state as punishment for a crime. The judicial decree that someone should be punished in this manner is called the death sentence, while the actual enforcement is the execution. Capital punishment has been practiced by most societies as a punishment for criminals and political or religious dissents. So some of the methods, and these are so horrific, it's almost comical, and it shows how absurd, in a way, capital punishment is in practice. Methods of capital punishment include crushing by elephant, devouring by lions, alligators, crocodiles, piranha, and sharks. Another method of capital punishment that has been done historically is they will strap your legs and arms to a horse for each arm and leg, and then they'll tear people apart that way with horses. The Mongolians prefer the backbreaking method of capital punishment because there's no blood. Also, historically, people have been tied to the mouths of cannons, and then the cannon will be fired. This stuff gets so ridiculous. Another method of capital punishment I found is that they would put wounds in a victim's back and then pull their lungs out through the wounds. Sorry about that. I know that's a horrific sight mentally. They also, in the past, we've boiled people to death using large cauldrons filled with water, oil, tar, even molten lead. People have been buried alive. ISIS recently has burned someone alive. There's also crucifixion. ISIS has been using decapitation. So the Meyer material doesn't approve of these things. It says what it does is it cuts short someone's life. Even someone that's guilty of a heinous crime, their life is cut short, and they won't have the opportunity for evolution that they otherwise would. So who or what historically has been behind all this capital punishment? Well, one of the institutions that have been behind capital punishment is something called the Holy See in Rome. And the Holy See is part of a organization in Rome, and they've always taken steps to save Christianity. And it's the Holy See is viewed as a sovereign state, a centralized government, in fact, diplomatically. And the Holy See acts and speaks for the whole Roman Catholic Church. In this connection, everyone listening should think of the Inquisition, which was ordered by the Holy See, and through which, according to the Meyer information, there were, in Europe alone, 9 million people were brutally slaughtered and tortured, and a number of murders committed by the Holy See. The first amount was some 9 million people were brutally murdered under capital punishment by the Holy See during the Inquisition. However, Billy says there is at least another 9 million that were murdered. So a total of 18 million people were killed by the Roman Catholic Church under the concept of capital punishment. So regardless of what your thoughts are on capital punishment, and I've gone back and forth over the years, it can be seen clearly that the death penalty has been abused very much in the past. In fact, the Vatican, the Pope, the Holy See has cooperated with Hitler. And in Contact 134, during World War II, a total of 7.5 million people were considered or killed under this capital punishment thing by the Nazi regime. And then things blur a little bit here because this was also a time of war. But let's call it capital punishment for the sake of argument. It says in Contact 134, there were two popes who got their hands dirty in the game with the Nazi regime. And these were the Pope Pius VI from 1922 to 1939 and Pope Pius VII, I believe, who held this office from 1939 to 1958. So maybe I have those numbers wrong, but both men have actively and consistently caused immense damage to the Jews with Adolf Hitler and his henchmen. And according to the Meyer information, it says 4.5 million Jews were killed and about 3 million other criminals and people who were insane were killed. It's just kind of a bit of a side tangent that I thought was very, very interesting. Capital punishment. And why it's not the best idea, why it cuts people's evolution short. Now, I wanted, and I have been trying for a couple shows, to read a little bit from a book by a man named Kevin Galilee, who I do have on Revolution Radio in a few weeks, actually March the 7th, which will be next weekend. By the way, this evening on Revolution Radio, for the first hour, I have Nancy Leader, who will talk about Planet X in the second hour. If you're interested in my material, you'll want to hear the second hour up on freedomslips.com. Studio B, Michael Utterbrook, who is from Figu, Canada. He's been to Switzerland 10 times, and he's been studying the Meyer material for many, many, many years. Has some amazing stories to tell about things he's witnessed in Switzerland. But let me read from this book by Kevin Galilee, who is a tremendous author, who has written a book called Killing Us Softly, The Global Depopulation Policy. According to Kevin, there is a global depopulation attempt underway. It's been focused mostly on the Western civilization. And what they've done is they've used fluoride, for example, to slowly sterilize us. Fluoride in the water of all the Western societies. So now our birth rate is down to 2 point something in Europe, in the United States, in Canada. And that's because of fluoride that's been put in our water. According to Kevin, the world leaders got together after World War II to try to discuss how they could prevent World War III. And they did their calculations with, you know, the current rate of the rising population. They didn't really have a mechanism in the third world really to introduce any kind of population control. So they focused on the Western world, and that's where we got fluoride in our water. Remember, fluoride's supposed to be good for you. What it's actually doing is sterilizing us. It also has a really bad effect on the mind. But anyway, let me read from this tremendous book, Killing Us Softly. Without our knowledge or consent, governments the world over have subverted our reproductive freedom and ability to procreate to achieve ambitious and necessary demographic objectives. In the process, have committed the most odious and wide-sweeping crimes in human history. To save mankind from an even greater evil, nuclear annihilation, mass starvation, environmental devastation. And the Meyer material talks very much about overpopulation problems. The birth of nearly 2 billion people has been prevented, and the death of a half a billion people has been hurried up. While these goals have been intentional, the architects of the global depopulation policy have unintentionally undermined the genetic and intellectual endowment of the human species and have set us back eons of natural selection. Their intentions have never been malevolent, but unintended results of their actions are frightening. Let me move on here. As the benefits of science and technology became global, the surge in population became global too. And a billion people were added in only 50 years, bringing the total to 3 billion people by 1950. Population pressures in the half century could no longer be absorbed by migration or the exploitation of colonies, and this led to bitter struggle for resources during the two world wars. Since 1950, we have added a billion new people every 10 to 15 years. So by 1970, we had 4 billion people. By 1987, we had 5 billion people. We went to 6 billion people by 1999, and we have 7 billion by 2011. The population is expected to peak at 9 billion by 2050 and then start to decline. The reason the population is expected to peak by 2050 is not because of prosperity and education, as we were led to believe, but because the global elite that makes up the international community and controls the United Nations has taken proactive measures since 1945 to ensure that resource scarcity and national greed do not cause World War III. For better or worse, we owe them six decades of relative peace and stability, which is an extraordinary accomplishment when one considers that this was achieved while the population has grown at the fastest pace in history. If our leaders had taken no proactive measures to curb population growth, we would now face a global population of 9 billion instead of 7, and our numbers would continue to double every 30 years and reach 14 billion by 2050 and 28 billion in less than a century from now. Judging by the dismal state of half the world's peoples and by the alarming pace of environmental degradation, even the current population is unsustainable. So we'll pick back up with that a little bit later. Grim words indeed, but this is really, in my opinion, what's going on in the world. All the people that rule the world, all the people in the United Nations, certainly some of them are evil, but there was a reason for what they did. I don't know that I go along with it, but it is what it is, and I guess they achieved their goals. I think I'm going to bring Nate on the air. Nate, how are you this afternoon?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah. You're real clear.
Oh, great.
And you're in by Google Thought.
Yeah, I was using Google Thought this first time, so. Yay.
I'm getting a slight bit of echo, but not much. You don't have the...
If it gets too bad, let me know, and I'll just call in by my cell phone.
Okay, I think it's fine, as long as we keep our... Let me check my volume, make sure it's... So you never found the contact report about the giant and all that?
Yeah, the giant who materialized in front of the guy who's in the bush. I haven't found that yet. I have dropped a line on the FIGU website, and I've also asked several people that are in our group meeting if they know anything. Because I know I read it, and I just hope I wasn't reading some other crazy thing and I, you know, crossed channels or something.
That's easy to do. No problem. You know what I think I'll do? Unless you had something specific that you wanted to cover right now, I think I'm going to play a clip called... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to wanted to comment a little bit. You, when you were reading one of the excerpts, you were talking about how Freud had sent us back through evolution or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Several, how many eons or something?
I'd have to reread it.
Okay. Well, it's kind of the gist I got from it. Like, if they wanted to control, if people wanted to control Earth populations and they wanted to do it from a subversion, I think, yeah, I don't know if fluoride would do it as much as just dumb us down and make us more like zombie-ish. And follow orders and not question things. I haven't looked. Have you looked into the effects of fluoride on the human reproductive system, or is this from this one book that you're reading?
Just this book. I haven't studied it independently, but I think it probably does make some sense.
And how effective? I mean, being at 8.5 billion people. According to the last Playoran count, how effective are these people at depopulating, would you say?
Well, they've been very effective with the Western world. In other words, with United States, with Europe, with Canada, with Australia, all the Western world that has an infrastructure where fluoride can be put in the water, our birth rate's down to 2 point something, which is basically the, you know, a level that'll at least keep the population stable.
Do you think that doesn't have anything to do with maybe spiritual evolution or observation or environment or current cultural conditions or personal choice? But it actually, you know, because we move out, we move into the cities. We don't have these large farms. There's a lot of things to do in the cities, you know.
I'm sure that all
kinda
that.
Kind of get what I'm saying?
I think all that plays a role, yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to put that out there because I've heard a lot of this. It's being sold, and I don't know. I don't know if it comes from the Georgia Guidestones or the Meyer information. I think the Georgia Guidestones were saying or mimicking, and some people were saying, hey, we've been overpopulated, we're overpopulated, and the idea of a never-ending consuming cycle, some people have sold. Like when I was little, they were saying, or I think the, you know, it's more of a Republican stance. I remember George Bush, I think the first one, talking about the spotted owl or the gray owl or something will be up to our necks in these owls if we try to protect them or something. So we should be able to decimate this forest and, you know, this idea of continual growth and stuff with no consequence. Because, you know, if people start paying attention, that there'll probably be, you know, regulations put on their corporations or how their power structure and stuff, and they don't want that. So I don't know. Continued growth. It just unsustainable growth. It's not in the books and stuff. You know.
There is a guy that I've been listening to a lot. His name is I think it's Peter Joseph, and he's the guy that created the movie Zeitgeist. And I'm going to play a clip now called Culture in Decline. Why don't you, if you don't mind, Nate, call back. I'm getting a fair amount of echo there. And
absolutely.
We'll pick back up with this discussion. This is Peter Joseph. Very interesting stuff. called Culture in Decline, which I think we certainly are, a culture in decline.
We live in a world of relentless change. Huge migrations of people to new megacities, filling soaring skyscrapers and vast slums. Ravenous appetites for fuel and food, unpredictable climate change. And all this in a world where the population is still growing. Should we be worried? Should we be scared? How to make sense of it all? Seven billion people now live on this planet of ours. Isn't it beautiful? But when some people think about the world and its future, they panic. Others prefer not to think about it at all. But tonight, I'm going to show you how things really are. My name is Hans Rosling. I'm a statistician at... No! Don't switch off! Because with the latest data from all countries, I'm going to show you the world in a new way. I'm going to tell you how world population is changing and what today's data tell us about how the future of the world will be. We undeniably face huge challenges. But the good news is that the future may not be quite as gloomy, and that mankind already is doing better than many of you think.
Babies, each one a blessing. But many people think population growth is out of control. Some even talk of a population bomb. Are they right?
So where are we with population today, and how did we get here? I'm going to tell you a story about everyone who ever lived. Well, at least during the last some thousand years. Here we go. I give you two axes. This is time in years, and this one here is world population in billions. In the year 10,000 BC, when the first people were becoming farmers, then the archaeologists estimate that the world population was only 10 million. Imagine, 10 million, that's like Sweden today. A world of only Swedes. But then, as the millennia passed by, more farmers, food and people, and great empires could emerge. Egypt, China, India, and finally Europe. And population continued to grow, but very slowly. And I stop here at the year 1800, because 1800, that's when world population became 1 billion. Imagine all that time, the population growth was just with a tiny fraction of a percent through thousands of years. But here, 1800, with the Industrial Revolution, everything changed. And population started to grow faster. In little more than 100 years, it reached 2 billion. And then, you know, when I was at school, it was 3 billion. And many people said, the planet cannot support more people. Even experts said that. But what happens was this, you know, we became 4 billion, 5 billion, 6 billion, 7 billion. Imagine, more than half of the world population have been added during my lifetime, and the number is still rising.
Most of the population growth in recent years has been in Asian countries, like here in Bangladesh, where the population has tripled during my lifetime, from 50 to more than 150 million. It's now one of the most densely populated countries in the world. Some 15 million already live in the very crowded capital, Dhaka. People here, whether in the city or the countryside, are intensely concerned about the size of families. But a new Bangladesh is emerging. Like the Khan family, Mom Taslima, daughters Tanjina and little Sadia, and Dad Hanan. Both Taslima and Hanan come from large families themselves, but they've decided to have just two children.
বাংলাদেশে এখন একটা স্লোগান আছে যেটা সবার ঘরে ঘরে জানে যে দুটি সন্তানের বেশি নয় একটি হলে ভালো হয়
আমার ভাগ্য ভালো যে আমাদের দুইটা সন্তান অনেক সন্তান হইলো তো তাদের কষ্ট দিতে পারতাম দুইটা সন্তান যে মনের মতন তো তাদের পূরণ করতে পারতেছি
তোমার আর কি
আমার পকেট খালি হয়ে গেছে
Taslima and Hanan are part of a cultural shift away from big families. And for Taslima, it's also become a job. She works for the government family planning service, which employs women like her in every village. She goes door to door to try to help others to have smaller families.
Okay, folks, that was not Peter Joseph. But it was another clip that I had made. It's called Culture in Decline. I think I might have a caller. I'm not sure. Let me say hello to 949. Did you want to come on the air?
Oh, this is Nate.
Nate. Okay. I wasn't sure. So you did call back.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, there is a website called fluoridealert.org. That shows fluoride's effect on male reproductive system, and there are several human studies there that you can study and you can look at. It's probably not it's not the only reason. I mean, I don't know. There's so much. This is very complicated, this whole population issue, and I'm just very much beginning to study it. So everyone, please bear with me. But I think there is a problem. I mean, a huge problem here. Wouldn't you agree with that, Nate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we're kind of looking at is the way we get to depopulate, the way we get to a number that is sustainable for the planet and that it's sustainable for the people living on the planet and that maximizes the evolution potential of the people living on the planet. I'm totally for any malicious act towards human beings. When I first heard they were putting fluoride in the water, I was skeptical, and it was not happening here. And I was just hearing like a lot of hearsay reports. No, but then I got a mail from the water authorities here in California, and they said they're now putting fluoride in the water. So when that happened, I was livid. I was pissed. I'm like, this is a poison. This is a toxin. If you look at your toothpaste, on the back side of the toothpaste, it says fluoride on it. It says not to be swallowed. If you were under 6 years old and you swallowed this, if you swallow more than, the top of my pinky worth of this, contact poison control immediately. It's on there. I mean, come on, people.
Isn't that something? I mean, isn't that just incredible that we are so gullible? And it took me years to figure this out, And I can remember, talking to, this has been maybe 10 years ago, talking to one of the managers in one of the companies I worked for, and I was trying to convince him that fluoride in the water wasn't good for you. But he was so brainwashed, he could not hear it. I mean, you can tell them that it's industrial waste. You can tell them that I think it's more toxic than lead and a little less toxic than arsenic.
That's comforting.
Isn't that something? It's a byproduct. Fluoride is a byproduct of the aluminum industry. It's industrial waste. And I think it has a bit of a byproduct with the nuclear industry. Is that true? Do you know?
That sounds familiar. I think actually what they were doing is, because of the way, businesses are structured and they're always trying to increase and move product forward, that one of the first outlets they had for this byproduct waste. Like, okay, if they here, how can we, you know, here's what's going to happen. It's a toxic waste, right? But we can either make money on it or we can pay money on it. So then they went about figuring out what they could do. And human brushing your teeth with it, it was supposed to kill your, you know, bacteria that causes cavities. However, you know, it also causes cavities, which is great. You know, if you look into dental fluorosis and you look at that, there's some amazing pictures of what fluoride does to teeth.
Oh, I know. I've seen him before. It's, you know, we live in a society that's filled with these incredible contradictions. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, let's look at, I'm going to just jump topics here a little bit, but it's kind of just on this whole idea of contradictions. We're told fluoride's good for you, but it actually is really bad for you. We have this extreme religion of ISIS. You know, they're supposed to, you know, they profess to be servants of the Creator and that they love people. Yet they do beheadings, they burn people alive, and recently they're destroying religious artifacts. Have you seen that? They're just destroying these beautiful statues in Iraq and things like that. Have you seen that, Nate?
Yeah, actually, I watched that today. With that stuff. And I think you're right about the whole contradiction thing. I mean, but these two are insane. So, I mean, expect contradictions. Expect them to call beheading someone love. Expect them to call, destroying stuff, that's good, creative. Just expect insanity from them. That's because that's all you're going to ever get from them. And they're extremely poisonous, and I feel, I don't know. I mean, I feel that we are not doing enough as society, as, you know, our media outlet channels to really drive home the insane poison of this group, the poisonous mentality that they have, you know. And what sucks about a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's piggybacking on our mistakes.
Right.
As a country, we invaded, we crippled, we created a power vacuum, go down the list. And and now you have these people in these mindsets, it's a never ending war with terrorism. Look, yes and no. Now you have to resell it and repackage it, but this time you have to use truth to do it instead of a bunch of media blitz lies saying Iraqi Al-Qaeda, Iraqi 9/11, Iraq, you know, just brainwashing people by, you know, proximity, you know, just saying, oh, well, because Bush has been saying Iraq and terrorists, and the terrorists must be over in Iraq, so we should invade and kill them, you know. Like, what? No. Stop.
Right.
But anyway.
That's so true. And it's a very complicated situation because we have kind of created these terrorists in a way. Osama bin Laden trained here in the United States. We gave the Muslim Brotherhood the anti-aircraft missiles to fight against the Russians during Afghanistan. So in a sense, we've armed these people. Now, what's really strange, I don't know if people have noticed this, but a lot of times when you see photographs of these columns of trucks that ISIS has, you see 35, 40 white Toyota pickup trucks, almost like they purchased them. They made an order, you know, and they got some kind of volume discount from Toyota or something. So there's this weird strangeness going on with our governments and with our corporations and an effort to try to keep war going. And I think what the Meyer information is trying to tell us is that we have created a monster here. Maybe this whole war on terror was originally just about us trying to gain resources like oil and natural gas, but now we have created a monster, a real threat. What do you think of that, Nate?
Yeah, I think that when we first started in the Iraqi war and why we were going to war with it is actually because we probably, from what I've seen, is we didn't. It wasn't the oil that was the problem. It was what was going to be done with the oil that was the problem that was going to collapse our currency as the world's reserve currency. Because Saddam was going to be selling oil on to other currencies. You know, instead of having these other countries have to trade their currency into the U.S. dollar in order to buy oil. And Saddam was going to circumvent that, and we had to do something about that. And that's why we went to war. And it was very, very, very wrong. But insanity is, yeah?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say insanity, yeah, because people don't think, you know, they don't think globally. You know, they think in sound bites and you know, if something isn't, you know, in attention spans in nanoseconds, pretty much.
Exactly. It's,
you know, and if they can't be, and they want distraction, they want a continuous life of distraction and sensationalism and stuff. And this is why I think talking about the Toyotas and look like they got a fleet discount, you know, this terrorist group got a fleet discount price on Toyotas, which is interesting because there was about a month ago I watched a YouTube video, I guess in Texas, this guy had sold his truck at an auction or just sold his truck back to one of these places. And then when the ISIS were attacking or something, his truck was there with his decals and stickers on it from his work. And
really?
If you go on YouTube, you'll find this. And he's like, I had no idea it was going anywhere, but I didn't sell it. And the news said, oh, yeah, it changed hands, an X amount of times before it got up into,
So let me see. I just want to make sure I got this story straight. This guy sold his truck, and it ended up in the Middle East, and it ended up being used by ISIS, correct?
Yeah.
Who did he sell it to originally?
I think he sold it back to the dealership. Because I think he was upgrading his trucks. And I'll see if I can find that and then post it for everybody in the chat room to get.
That's so crazy. It's so crazy. Oh, man, I just can't, you know, the world has truly gone insane. I wanted to talk just briefly about Billy's as a young boy again, and I've talked about this many times, and I'll try not to harp on this too long, but for the people that are new to the show and also for us that have heard this before, I think it's so important to understand the nature of the universe and the nature of creation and the nature of reality now. When Billy was growing up as a small boy in Bulak, Switzerland, he woke up about 3 a.m. one morning, one night in May, and the year was 1941, and he crawled out of a small window in his bedroom, and he sat down on a bench, and he looked up at a sky, a beautiful starry sky, and he had kind of an epiphany, and he heard his own voice start to speak as if he was almost controlled in a sense. And he heard a voice in his head that said, my life is made out of the love of creation. And then suddenly, on his own lips were formed, since ancient times, you've lived among the stars. And he said he suddenly knew who he was and what his mission was on the earth. And he felt these impulses from somewhere. And later in life, he recognized that he was getting impulses from what are called the storage banks. Our universe has storage banks. In the German, they're called Speicherbank. And there's information in the storage banks. In fact, subconsciously, all of us have information from these storage banks. We have impulses from ancient Vedic writings in these storage banks. And Billy was particularly sensitive to these impulses, probably because of the age of his spirit form. And he knew immediately at 4 years of age, he said that good memories penetrated him and showed him the way that he had to go in life. And this was a very profound experience for him. And what happens, and this is a normal process for us as human beings on the earth, we will be impulsed from the universal storage banks. And this is part of our evolutionary process during a lifetime. You know, there are historical records in physical society. There are physical buildings. There are physical records that are of significant cultural value, like from a library. But there are kind of metaphysical records that are perhaps in an energetic state that are open to us. And part of the evolution of a spirit form occurs by getting these impulses from the storage banks, and the impulses are signals. And just like in the medical world, we can have a signal, an electrical impulse that goes from our brain down along a nerve fiber and then moves your hand or your foot. We can also get these feelings, these intuitions, because the universal consciousness wants to come into harmonious concord with all life on earth, with all people, with, you know, even the plants and the animals. It's a natural process that these impulses come out of the storage banks. And in fact, Billy, when he wrote the book Goblet of Truth, he pulled the first 14 pages of that book down from the universal storage banks. So we have storage banks. We have something called the Strudel in German, which is the storage bank for the spiritual teachings. And actually, Billy had pulled the first 14 chapters out of our terrestrial storage banks, because there are Earth-based storage banks as well as universal storage banks. In this writing, it's called How It All Began, and I recommend everyone goes up to the Future of Mankind site and take time to read How It All Began. And it says here, already at the age of 4, this great recognition instantly changed my life, because after I was familiarized with the insight and understanding by means of impulses from the storage banks, I also learned who I really was, what I had to learn and do in my life, what my life task was. I looked at human beings and animals and nature as well as existing things in a completely new way. And suddenly I felt a great astonishment with myself about that. So these impulses from the storage banks seem to be associated with understanding, guidance, and memory. There is a creator of our universe, a super intelligence. It's not a religious deity. It's not anthropomorphic in any way. It's a neutral positive entity. Billy's third contact, a woman named Semyase, described the creation this way. She said that love and wisdom go together, and that the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. And like I was saying earlier, there are these impulses in the storage banks that are from ancient Indian Vedic teachings thousands of years ago. And these impulses are held in an ancient language, which is constantly present in the subconscious of all human beings via the impulses. So information from these storage banks is present in our subconscious. Now, we have something called a collective subconscious here on Earth. All human beings have a collective subconscious. That's why when something is discovered on one side of the Earth, on the other side, 2 or 3 days later, someone else will make a similar discovery. Because as Spoth told Billy, everything in the universe is one, and it's all bound together. So the creation, the universal consciousness, is trying to come into harmonious concord with all the life on the planet. So we need to be open. We don't need to numb ourselves down and to dumb ourselves down to survive. We need to be clear thinking, open minded, and be open for these impulses. Now, Billy met with Semyase. And she came, she had 10 meetings with him before Semyase started to give him the basis for the spiritual teachings here on Earth. And she said something very interesting. She said, a human's yearning lies in the joy that remains for the imperishable life, the permanent peace, the spiritual and consciousness-related wealth that never fades and lasts forever. Now, a yearning is an intense longing for something. Yearning can be a deep longing, especially accompanied by tenderness and sadness. Some synonyms for yearning include hunger, desire, longing, passion. The German word sehnen can mean to long, to crave, to pine after. So this verse is telling us that we long for the spiritual existence, for the joy associated to that spiritual existence. We are said to long for the imperishable life. Something that is imperishable means it endures forever. The German word overganglich means imperishable. So we all have this longing to be in the spiritual again, to be part of imperishable life. And this is what happens here on the earth, is the real you, what lasts between lifetimes, is a tiny bit of energy. It's called the spirit form. It's no bigger than the head of a needle, and it's located in your superior colliculus between the left lobe and the right lobe. And it sends its energy throughout the whole body. It enlivens every cell. It starts the heart to beat in the child. And we get something called the material consciousness. We get a new material consciousness every time we reincarnate. So every time you come back into the physical world, you'll get a new perspective, a different personality. So what happens for, I think it's about 20 to 40 million years, we reincarnate into physical bodies, lifetime after lifetime, and slowly the spirit form gains wisdom from each one of these lifetimes. And then we advance up through these 7 evolutionary steps. And the 5th step, you've heard me talk about before, is the step where we get to what some have been called the Ishwish, the King of Wisdom. We have life and creational wisdom. That's the last stage before we switch over into a partially spiritual body. So anyway, this reincarnation, it takes a long time, but deep within us is this yearning for the imperishable life, and eventually we'll incarnate through all these physical states until we finally merge back with this universal consciousness. Billy describes the deep tranquility and the unbelievable peacefulness that he experienced when he was taking these hyperleaps on the Great Spacer. In Contact 31, Billy was lucky enough, fortunate enough, to be taken by Semyase onto this giant spacecraft that was like 10 miles in diameter. It looks more like a small planet. And they would literally, that ship could jump from star to star, and he would feel the deep tranquility each time that ship would jump. And on the roof of that starship, you could see stars because the material for the roof of this craft was transparent. And Billy described it this way: "Now I look at everything in peace and with clear eyes, and I can't describe the infinite vastness and size and the splendor and beauty of the universe that stretches out before me. The words fail me." This is what he described, the tranquility when the ship would go into the hyperjump. He'd say, "This deep tranquility, this unbelievable peacefulness flowing through me is eternity itself. The absolute timelessness, which obviously is no longer subject to outside influences such as the restlessness, strife, and worries that trouble the consciousness. In the spiritual realm, you'll have no worries. You'll have no restlessness. You'll have no troubles. You'll be free from disturbance." Billy goes on and he writes, "I realized suddenly that during these few seconds, I was in the eternity itself, experiencing myself as eternity, where I can only exist as fine spiritual matter, and I'm completely free of all that can influence my material life." Billy describes another hyperleap. I'll talk about this briefly. He said, "This light, this radiant light, such profound love, calm and peace it has. Oh, now I understand. I can't see or hear, but I am finding. I feel, I live, I am finding. Oh, this beautiful peace." Now there's this wonderful passage that I talk about very much in the Goblet of Truth. And it's entitled, "What the Truth Knows to Say." And it goes on to explain that rivers, lakes, trees, stones, the air and water, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And all these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth. Rebirth into the world of pure spirit. Now, creation is pure spirit. The universal consciousness is pure spirit. Go into a forest. Take the time to reconnect with nature. If you're in the forest during the warm months, you'll be able to listen to the sounds of creation. The crickets, the birds, the cicadas, the peepers, the frogs, they all communicate with one another. And if you're sensitive enough, you'll be able to have the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation, which is called empfinden. Now, this is very rare today. Most people can get a high from nature, and I think that's a good start. But we have to get back to a sensitivity for creation. Because as Billy says, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love so that every moment and every place you can feel the radiating love of creation. Now, in the Goblet of Truth, Billy describes it this way in chapter 25. It says, therefore, you humankind of earth, you must strive and evolve as individuals in yourselves from out of your own consciousness as well as out of the thoughts and the feelings in order to come to the truth and to the fine spiritual perceiving of the love of creation. So there can be true love and harmony as well as freedom and peace in order to then also carry forth these high values. See, we are in what the Meyer material calls the third millennium. The third millennium, a time of confusion, a time of maliciousness, a time that's going to last, unfortunately, about 800 years, and it's going to take us a long time to get through this. So one thing that we all have to do is continue this spiritual growth, continue our awareness. Because today, we are blinded by illusionary images, and we need to awaken to reality. And this capability arises from our consciousness, because our human spirit is said to be the wonder of all wonders, and that all power emerges from the human spirit. So if a human is happy, his happiness comes from within, because happiness is a self-created state, never a location. Joy comes through spiritual poise. So, folks, anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the show. We'll be back on tomorrow. We'll be back on tonight on freedomslips.com. We'll be talking with Michael Utterbrook at 9 p.m. Eastern. He's been in Switzerland 10 different times. Amazing sightings, amazing stories he's going to share with us tonight. At 8 p.m. I'll have Nancy Leader on to talk about Planet X. But I hope you've enjoyed the show. And we'll be back on tomorrow if everything works out well and continue our current line of discussion. You're listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'd like to thank Nate for joining me this afternoon. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Have a good afternoon.